This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome everyone to Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross. You've got the 2024 Wimbledon Preview and Prediction Show, where I will offer you my dark horses, my upset alerts, my popcorn matchups, my quarterfinal predictions, and the final weekend predictions. Can't wait to do another Wimbledon. Gonna have a lot of coverage coming down the pipeline. It's gonna be kind of round by round shows I want to do for the first week, and then we'll lock in and do more kind of match by match coverage over the course of the second week. So make sure that you are subscribed, whether you're listening on audio platforms or YouTube. Subscribe on both, why not? And the only difference, the new thing, I guess, that I do want to talk about is my Discord real quick, a place to chat about tennis 24/7 over the course of Wimbledon. I launched it right after Roland Garros. There's already over 500 members in the Discord. The link is in the description, and I'm excited to see how that community starts to, you know, pop off as we go through Wimbledon. That part should be a lot of fun. No major storylines here that I want to cover at the top. No overarching preambles. Let's just get into the quarter-by-quarter breakdown of Wimbledon 2024, beginning with Jannik Sinner's quarter. All right, we've got Sinner, Medvedev, Dimitrov, Shelton, Jarry, Mannarino, Griekspoor, and Zhang. My dark horse here is Denis Shapovalov. My upset alert, Ben Shelton. My early popcorn is Sinner versus Berrettini, round two. Starting with, of course, the dark horse, where I went with Denis Shapovalov. There were a lot of options here, a lot of really great options. Why did I land on Denis Shapovalov when you have Matteo Berrettini in here, who landed ninth in my power rankings? You have Jan-Lennard Struff, who I rated next out in my power rankings, which essentially means that I see Struff as a top 14 player in the draw. Didn't make him dark horse. Christian Garin is here. Garin's record at Wimbledon, if you include qualifying, is 16-5. He basically qualifies for Wimbledon every single time, and he's made some noise in the main draw in the past as well. Lloyd Harris has started to come alive with his big serve, great weaponry. So why Shapo? I filled out my bracket, and Shapovalov is the guy who, based on the matchups and the draw opportunity, he's the only one I actually picked to the fourth round. That is why he's my dark horse. I have him beating Nicolas Jarry, who has had an infection and has been off the tour for a little while, and I don't know what we're going to get out of him. Arthur Ferry in the second round. Either Lloyd Harris or Ben Shelton in the third round. I like Denis in all of those matchups. Shapo tends to control the ball better at Wimbledon. He likes the balls here, and it just seems like everything is kind of reined in and the ball cooperates with him a little bit more at Wimbledon than it tends to at other events. He made that semifinal run here in 2021, and last year he looked well on his way to a quarterfinal before his knee gave out on him and his movement deteriorated against Roman Safulin. So Shapo's made serious noise here. I think the draw opportunity is here. And I have him going further than any of the other ultra-talented, unseeded players that I have in this draw. And by the way, if you're new to the channel, you should note that for my dark horse selection, it must be an unseeded player. Seeded players are not allowed to be dark horses. And as we go along to the upset alert, I'll also say that in order to be an upset alert, it needs to be a seed, which is a little bit more self-explanatory and obvious. In this case, my upset alert is Ben Shelton. I watched his match against Paul Jubb in Mallorca, and I just feel like there are a lot of issues at present, including his serve not really doing enough for him, which is kind of what everybody goes to. It's like, oh, Shelton, huge serve, so should be good on grass. Well, what makes his serve so difficult to handle in part is the way that heavy spin, that heavy action jumps off of the court and kind of kicks up wildly or slides out wildly. And that can make it difficult to deal with on courts that actually take to the spin. But what I'm seeing on grass is the heavy action that he gets on his ball. It's not really reacting to the court surface in a way that is really difficult to handle. And the fact that he's not really hitting spots on his serve, which he doesn't do all that well, it's making his serve a lot easier to handle. Plus, he's had some shoulder issues that has potentially even taken away some of that, you know, A-plus tier one pace that he's used to generating on his serve. In fact, there have been a few arm issues popping up recently for Shelton that I'm a little bit worried about. Plus, the shot selection and the backhand, especially when the ball stays low, are still holes. So you look at his draw. I don't know that much about Mattia Bellucci, who qualified, but the results are there. You know, there's enough results there for me to kind of be like, okay, that could be dangerous. And then Lloyd Harris or Alex Mickelson in the second round, I don't think Ben Shelton gets out of that. And that's why I have him as my upset alert. You know, Nicholas Jarry, I also have losing first round. Adrian Mannarino, I also have losing first round to Gael Monfils, which I know seems crazy on grass, but Adrian is in a serious rut, and Gael actually has some momentum here. But of all of those upsets, Shelton is the most, I think, upsetty of them all, which is why I made him my official upset alert. My popcorn matchup is Jannik Sinner versus Matteo Berrettini. Most obvious popcorn of the draw. Again, guidelines for early popcorn matchups. Needs to be either a first round or a second round match. I think the most interesting and intriguing match, in my opinion, it's highly subjective, but in this case, I think most would agree, Sinner Berrettini sticks out here. Two guys who I have ranked top 10 in my power rankings. Now, I do want to say Matteo Berrettini plays Martin Fucsovics in the first round. We should not look past that. Matteo should certainly not look past that. I mean, you can't just pencil Berrettini in for the second round when you have Fucsovics in the first round, who is a former Wimbledon quarterfinalist. But I do favor Berrettini. I do think we'll get Sinner Berrettini, and that will probably be the highest quality second round match in the draw. I'm not saying it's going to be the most competitive or the most compelling, because I do think there's a world in which Sinner wins easily, and that's because Jannik is in that elite tier of return of serve. He can keep Matteo's first serve win percentage down low enough where, you know, you always know that the second serve return, the second serve battle is going to be tilted in favor of the far superior baseliner, and that is Jannik Sinner. But the key for when you're playing Berrettini is, do you have a good enough return of serve to keep that those first serve return points to steal a couple of them? And I think Sinner has the kind of return where he's going to steal some, and that's going to give him enough. So I don't really see an upset here, but it's definitely one that you got to watch. My quarterfinal prediction is Jannik Sinner defeating Daniil Medvedev. Let's cover Medvedev first. This wasn't an easy one because Dimitrov versus Daniil is a tough one for me. In fact, there have been times this year where they've been in the same draw and I've picked Dimitrov to upset Medvedev because I think especially on a low bouncing court, there are some things tactically that I think Dimitrov can do to bother Medvedev. And I'm also kind of just high on how Grigor has played over the course of the last year with his first serve and his forehand. I see him having success with the wide serve plus one against Daniil and to kind of take away the backhand advantage that Medvedev usually has by just hitting a lot of slice backhands that stay even lower on grass and make Daniil Medvedev hit up where Dimitrov can look for a forehand on the next ball. So that's my tactical brain. My tactical brain says that Dimitrov has a chance here. My more kind of data-driven brain says that Medvedev should win. despite the fact that Grigor has had moments against Daniil and that he has had wins. It's still a head-to-head that Medvedev has had a clear advantage in. And overall, if you just look at the slam consistency between the two, it's not even close. Medvedev has been a far more consistent performer. And Dimitrov has, even in the last year or so, where his level has gone up to some of the best we've seen, there have been some shockers at the majors, and that worries me, no doubt. Ultimately, I went with my data brain. I see that match going five, and Medvedev just kind of figuring out a way like he did so many times in Australia. I mean, he has that ability. Find a way to win. Figure it out. And Dimitrov, we've seen a few times, like think about Wimbledon last year. He should have beaten Holger Rune. He didn't find a way to win. He found a way to lose. And, you know, too often I'm seeing that dichotomy in my head. I'll also note that Medvedev has to play Jan Lennard Struff. I'm really kind of hoping, even though I'm not in the business of rooting for players, I'm kind of hoping Struff makes the third round of Wimbledon, because it's just crazy to me that he's a grass court player with such assets, with the spot serving and the net rushing and the aggressive returning, and he just hasn't played well at Wimbledon. But Medvedev has played Struff really well. That's a good head-to-head for Medvedev. So that's kind of why I looked the other way on that one, and it didn't kind of affect my decision to put Medvedev ahead to the quarterfinals. And then the last thing I'll say about Daniil, this time I promise, I just think he's being slept on and underlooked. Like, this is a guy who made the Australian Open final and then had a good sunshine double, and then he hits the clay, and he struggles. He's Daniil Medvedev. Like, how are we letting his stock get so low? How are we forgetting about what he can do as a player just because he didn't have a good clay season? So I just think narratively, and maybe I'm missing something, and I'm off the mark here trying to read the discourse. But my read of the discourse is like that we're kind of shoving away Medvedev, someone who made the Wimbledon semifinal last year. Like, I've been hearing so much, you know, Hurkacz is a better contender than Medvedev this year at Wimbledon. Just don't see that. You know, I just think that's really discounting. I get it. I get where people are coming from with the Hurkacz serve and all of that. Don't get me wrong. And Medvedev has had some vulnerabilities on grass at the very least. But I just think it's a little bit dismissive of the fact that Medvedev has consistently off clay been that kind of borderline tier one contender at majors. And we're just gonna write him off a little bit too quickly, especially because I know that he's going to return from closer in at Wimbledon this year, and that should help him. Okay, on the Yannick Sinner side of things, he has a bit of a gauntlet to go through. Yannick Hanfmann first round, I'm not sweating that one, although Hanfmann has been kind of a player who pulls off upsets from time to time. Berrettini second round, that's a terrible break. Griekspoor third round, I haven't looked at seeds 20 through 32, but I think the only tougher guy seeds 20 through 32 are Draper and maybe Korda. And then after that, I'd probably throw Griekspoor in there. It's not a good third round opponent, although they've played a bunch of times and Sinner keeps winning. Chapeau fourth round, that I wouldn't call a bad fourth round if you're Yannick, although once Chapeau starts feeling good and getting some momentum, it's a little bit uncomfortable to play him. It's a little bit scary to play him because he can take the racket out of your hands, not just with a serve, but even like in rally, he can take the racket out of your hands. And then Medvedev quarterfinals, you know, you're not going to get an easy opponent in the quarters. But I just think Berrettini second round, Griekspoor third round, a little bit rough for Sinner, but not enough for me to kind of hesitate with putting Yannick all the way through. And he played Medvedev so well at the end of last year. He beat him in multiple ways. Then at the Australian Open, he kind of took out Daniil's legs and then basically hit him off the court after that. So there's been a lot of positive trends, Sinner over Medvedev. I don't think grass changes that. And I will correct something I said on the power rankings, which I got wrong. I said that Sinner hadn't lost before the semis since the U.S. Open. That would actually be Beijing, because Shelton beat Sinner in the round of 16 in Beijing. So a correction there. And I made a couple of mistakes on my power rankings video, which I was kicking myself about. I always comment the corrections on YouTube, but those listening on the podcast, they don't even really see the corrections. So I like to maybe throw them in when I can. Okay, let's go now to Alcaraz's quarter. Number three seed, Carlitos Alcaraz, defending Wimbledon champion. He's got Ruud, Humbert, Baez, Bublik, Tiafoe, and Navone. My dark horse here is Jordan Thompson. My upset alert is Casper Ruud. And my early popcorn, two decent choices. I didn't feel good enough about either one of them to write it down, but I will share with you what my candidates are for early popcorn. Let me start by telling you about my dark horse, Jordan Thompson.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
So off clay this year, Thompson is 16-10. In general, he has won four out of his last five matches against top 20 players. He doesn't like the clay, but if you kind of take that out of the sample, where he wasn't horrendous, but he wasn't good either, Thompson has had an awesome year, and it makes a lot of sense why he likes the grass, as a lot of the times Aussies do. He is an excellent spot server. It's not a super powerful serve, but he hits his spots. He is a very quick and nimble, athletic net rusher with great hands. He's got a flat backhand that he redirects well with, and he's got good grass court movement, light on his feet. He's able to change direction and take those little adjustment steps in the corners, or not adjustment steps, deceleration steps in the corners that allow him to recover in and out of the court. So Thompson is a fantastic grass court player. And I think ever since he played Djokovic at Wimbledon last year, I've liked what I've seen from him. He's been playing, I think, more aggressive tennis, the most aggressive tennis of his career since that Djokovic match at Wimbledon, where he had a really good showing. Novak broke him twice in three sets. It was a straight set win for Djokovic, but all three sets were tight. And Thompson actually ended up serve and volleying for most of that match. And Djokovic didn't have all that many answers for it. He kind of needed Thompson to miss first serves in order to create opportunities in that match, which was just really impressive from Thompson overall. Shout out to Brandon Nakashima, though, because I have Thompson playing Nakashima second round, and I really like what I've seen from Brandon. I was going to consider making Nakashima a dark horse. I only went with Jordan by a narrow margin. My opinion, mark it down, stamp it down. You heard it here first. The winner of Nakashima Thompson second round will make the fourth round. That's right. Put it in the books. My upset alert is Casper Ruud. And I know with Ruud, given his grass court results, given his scheduling decisions the last 2 years, opting not to play any grass lead-ins when obviously he sorely needs the reps on this surface. Given that, you might say that, yes, Casper Ruud is an upset within the rules of these previews where I have to pick a seeded player who I think is most likely to lose early. However, he's not an upset in principle. But then you look at Casper Ruud's draw, and I would say oh man, it's actually so kind that these would be upsets. He got a great draw. Now, it's Alex Bolt, qualifier from Australia in the first round. It is, I think, Dominic Kupfer in the second round, although it could be Fabio Fognini. But let's say it is Bolt Kupfer. Rude has taken three losses to lefties outside the top 100 on grass in the last 2 years. He has lost to Ryan Peniston. He has lost to Hugo Humbert. And he has lost to Liam Brody. In recent history, whenever Casper Ruud has entered a grass court event, he has lost to a lefty outside the top 100. With the disclaimer that Hugo Humbert being outside the top 100 was a little bit of a misrepresentation. Still, now he plays lefty world number 235, Alex Bolt, in the first round. And then he plays another lefty, this time inside the top 100, in Dominic Kupfer in the second round. Lefty, grass, Ruud, it's been a bad combination. Just saying. That said, his seed is the best seed in the entire draw. He has Mariano Navone, who is 0-2 lifetime on grass, who not only has never won a set on grass in his professional career, he hasn't done better than 6-3. So, like, Ruud has a real opportunity to make the fourth round. And I got to say, although he's my pick for upset alert, I'd say if I had to pick one guy to make the fourth round between Lorenzo Sonego and Roberto Bautista Agut, Kupfer, Fognini, Bolt, I mean, I would pick Ruud to do it. Like, I think Ruud is the most likely guy to make the fourth round. That's how good his draw is. I have him losing to Tommy Paul in round four. All right. Popcorn. Two decent choices. Bublik versus Mensik in the first round. Sasha defending fourth round points. Jakob Mensik, a prospect who I am extremely high on. I think he's so good. He's had some injury issues in the last couple months, which has slowed his progress. But Mensik seeks his slam breakthrough, which he kind of did have a run at the U.S. Open last year. But, you know, beating better players because he had a good draw at the U.S. Open. Tiafo versus Arnaldi, first round. I think that's another pretty solid first round matchup worth watching. That's an even matchup. I think it could go either way. Two guys who play charismatic tennis who are fun to watch. So Bublik versus Mensik, Tiafo versus Arnaldi. None of them are absolute barn burners, but I think both are worthy shout-outs. Two decent choices for popcorn matches. Quarterfinal prediction is Carlos Alcaraz defeats Tommy Paul. Tommy Paul is a huge draw winner. I mentioned so is Casper Ruud. So in a way, those two things are related because the fourth round opponent for Tommy Paul is Casper, which I think is positive. But other than that, Paul sees Pedro Martinez in the first round. He sees either Max Purcell or Otto Virtanen in the second round. And I think he'll probably see Alexander Bublik in the third round if he survives that far. I think that's pretty good for Tommy Paul. And you know that I really like the grass court tennis that he showed in Queens. And I've kind of been waiting for Tommy since his relative game transformation under Coach Brad Stein, where he's coming forward more and he's taking the ball earlier and he's using his transition game to be offensive. I've kind of been waiting for him to have that grass breakthrough, and I think this is the year for him to do it. So Wimbledon quarterfinalist Tommy Paul, I think we're about to see that. Now Alcaraz is kind of the reverse of Jannik Sinner. I mentioned Sinner last year at Wimbledon, easy draw. This year at Wimbledon, tough draw. Alcaraz last year at Wimbledon, despite winning it, really tough draw. He was the guy who had to play an unseeded Matteo Berrettini, albeit in the fourth round, and a Nicolas Jarry, and a Holger Rune. I mean, honestly, it wasn't as brutal as early as it is for Sinner, but there were a lot of big hitters that Alcaraz had to contend with, which we thought was going to be kind of his most dangerous style of opponent. Well, this year, Alcaraz has been rewarded with a very, very comfy and nice draw where he plays Mark Lyall of Estonia outside the top 150 in the first round, maybe Sebastian Offner, maybe Alexander Vukic in the second round. I got Matteo Arnaldi in the third round. I don't think it'll be Tiafo, but if the seed holds, it'll be Tiafo. Jordan Thompson in the fourth round, another unseeded player who I have coming through this section over Hugo Humbert. So I don't have Alcaraz playing a seed until he comes up against Tommy Paul in the quarters, which, in fairness, is a tough matchup for Carlos Alcaraz. Their head-to-head is 2-2. Tommy has beaten him 2 years in a row in Canada, playing phenomenal matches both times, the American. He's had two great forehand days. He has not let Alcaraz neutralize points with his defense because he was at the net a ton in both of those matches. He was hitting stifling returns, rushing Alcaraz on his plus one on a consistent basis. But I think this time, in a massive match at a major, hit Alcaraz, Juan Carlos Ferrero, I think they get in the lab and do a little bit more strategizing than they have the previous two times against a Tommy Paul. And I think they look to slice more backhands on the cross court, hit hard second serves to Paul's forehand, really try to avoid that backhand on the second serve, which Alcaraz, to my memory, wasn't really doing. And also more playing up the middle with good depth and good pace, which is a good way to play Tommy. So I think if Alcaraz just makes some tactical adjustments and plays it a little bit smarter, I give him the edge over Tommy Paul, although that would be one to watch. Look, they're both so athletic. They fly around the court, and somehow Alcaraz seems to bring the best Tommy Paul out to play, which is more than anything been the main thing that's made it difficult on Carlitos when those two have played. Alexander Zverev's quarter, number four seed, coming off of his Roland Garros final. He's got Rublev, Tsitsipas, Fritz, Korda, Tabilo, Musetti, and Draper in his quarter. My dark horse in this quarter is Marcos Giron. My upset alert, Sebastian Korda. And my early popcorn, Draper versus Nori, round two. So, by the way, this quarter as a whole, I know that I said that Alcaraz has a pretty nice draw, that Tommy Paul also has a pretty nice draw. That implies that Alcaraz's quarter is favorable, is somewhat soft. And I think in the grand scheme of things, it is somewhat soft. But this quarter is by far the softest. And in terms of chaos potential, this is the quarter where you could see things really breaking down. And there are a lot of different outcomes that feel highly plausible in this quarter because you have some vulnerable seeds. You frankly have a lack of even high-quality unseeded players in this quarter on grass, which kind of brings me to my dark horse pick because normally I look for a combination of level potential and draw potential. But for this quarter, I looked up and down, and I couldn't find someone with both, so I'll just have to settle for someone who has one of the two, and that is Marcos Giron, who has the level, in my opinion, but doesn't have the draw. He is battle-tested coming into this Wimbledon, like in a big way. He has beaten Murray, he's beaten Rublev, he's beaten Berrettini all this grass swing, plus he pushed Draper to three sets in a loss, and also was defeated by Hubert Hurkacz, 7-6, 6-4. This guy has played so many good players on grass in the last 2 weeks, and he's pretty much held his own each and every time. Plus, he's pulled out some wins. Low center of gravity, flat ground strokes, particularly damaging off of his forehand on this surface, has some craftiness to him as well. But he'll have to play Alexander Zverev in the second round. I still think that Giron, just given what he's done on the grass, and also the fact that Zverev is known to kind of get himself in some early round battles at majors, I think he is somebody to circle here. My upset alert is Sebastian Korda. Now, I think that Stefanos Tsitsipas and Andrei Rublev are on paper much better candidates for upset alert than Korda. The problem is I look at who Rublev and Tsitsipas are playing in the first two rounds, and I just don't see it. I just don't see him losing. Korda, on the other hand, is a little bit different than Rublev and Tsitsipas because he's actually had a really good grass court season. His stock is high. He got, you know, he went final, semifinal in his grass court lead-ins. You got to pick one for upset alert, and I feel like Korda has the highest chance of losing in the first two rounds of all of them. Davidovich Fokina is his first round opponent. Then you have either Borges or Nishioka. I think it'll be Nuno Borges, who has a good serve plus one and a flat backhand. He's a good ball striker, doesn't move super well, but I actually think on paper, Borges has a good game for grass. So I look at the first two opponents that Korda has to face, and I don't think he can afford a bad performance against them. I still worry about how Korda plays on a bad day. And he hasn't, throughout his career, played his best tennis at slams, with the exception of his Australian Open quarterfinal last year. So I know this is a contrarian pick. You know, there are going to be some people, I wouldn't blame some people for picking Korda to the semifinal in this section, because this quarter represents opportunity, and there is something to be said for Korda's peak level. There's something to be said for obviously how well Korda has played in the lead-in. But to me, he's still in danger in these first two rounds. Popcorn Draper versus Norrie second round. I want to see how Draper handles this mentally, because if this ends up happening, he's going to have a hungry Cam Norrie fighting like an animal on Wimbledon center court, who has been stripped of his title as number one British male. And with that underdog mentality, it's kind of where Norrie has thrived for most of his career. Draper in the spotlight at Wimbledon, really, for the first time in his career. And I think this could be a competitive match. I'm also curious to see how the points look, because in a lot of ways, these two players mirror each other with their flat, low trajectory backhands, their spinnier, higher trajectory forehands, lefty on lefty. I think it's an interesting one to look at as well. And then a shout out to Korda versus Davidovich Fokina round one. I think that's also one that potentially you should have your eyes on. Quarterfinal prediction here is Zverev defeats Musetti. I don't feel great about this one. And that's kind of natural, right? I mentioned this quarter, there's a lot of scenarios that feel very plausible. And because that's the case, not one or two or even three scenarios feel highly plausible. It's more like 10 scenarios feel somewhat plausible. And that's why no pick feels good to me, including Zverev, because I look at his draw. I think Giron will take a set at least. Draper has an advantage on the deuce side cross court. His backhand cross court to Zverev's forehand, I love that pattern for Jack. I think that's a great pattern for Jack. I don't think it's a good matchup for Zverev. Next round, I have Zverev against Taylor Fritz. Zverev's only 5-3 against Fritz. They've played tight at Wimbledon twice. Zverev has won both, but both have been close. A five-setter and a fourth-set tiebreak. So I have my qualms about Zverev, who has never made a Wimbledon quarterfinal and does not have even a lot of good grass court wins, even if you expand your scope outside of Wimbledon and look at his career. But if I pulled the trigger and said, I think Draper is going to beat Zverev, if that's what I had in my draw, which I thought about, then I would have had Lorenzo Musetti to the Wimbledon semis, because I'd have, or maybe Taylor Fritz, maybe Fritz, but I'd have Musetti or Fritz to the semis. And I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I'd rather roll with Zverev, whose serving is a level up this year, whose best of five resilience has been on display for the last several years of his career. He finds himself in battles he usually gets through. He is really good at staying tough and being resilient in this format at slams. And I don't think the level to which he has struggled on grass is something that can continue each and every year. I do think that there are reasons for it. I don't think it's a coincidence that Zverev has struggled on grass, but I don't know that we're going to be looking at Alexander Zverev retiring without a Wimbledon run. I can't really see that. So, looks like this might be the year. It is a soft quarter, and I put Zverev through to the semifinal. Let me just explain my Musetti logic as well here. Matchups, all matchups. It's not that I particularly like Musetti as the best grass court player in his section, but I have him beating Rublev and I have him beating Korda. Rhythm power baseliners, less consistent than Musetti, can't serve through him, and Musetti will use his creativity and his defense to muddy up the points, to break up the rhythm of the rallies, use the short angles, use his slice, extend points defensively, and mix in those injections of pace on the forehand cross court, the redirections with the backhand down the line when he has time on the ball to do it. Lorenzo has been playing good grass court tennis, and I think those guys who want rhythmic baseline rallies, they want the ball in their strike zones, Musetti can break that up and have success against those guys. That's why I like Musetti to make the quarterfinal. But as I said, Zverev through to the semis. Let's go on to Novak Djokovic's quarter. He is the number two seed. He is playing despite the torn meniscus suffered at Roland Garros just 3 weeks ago. He has gotten healthy in time. He has looked good in practice and exhibitions in the lead up as well. And he's got top seeds, Hurkacz, Demonor, Runa, FAA, Khachanov, and Echeverry. My dark horse here is Tomas Mahach. My upset alert is Karen Khachanov. And my early popcorn is Murray versus Mahach in round number one.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Dark horse Tomas Mahach. He's a young player, and that usually means you don't have much of a grass court resume to look at. Tomas is no exception. He is 5-5 in his career on grass. The results are not standout, but they're also not poor enough to scare me away from making Mahach my dark horse. He is a player whose offensive shot making I love. His backhand is a terrifying weapon. It can be a bazooka in terms of pace generation. He can also produce some insane angles from the middle of the court with his backhand. He's good with the off backhand going inside out from the middle of the court. It's just, you don't want to mess with that backhand. It's scary stuff. His volleying is also excellent, and I expect him to use that quite a bit on the grass. He's more of a spot server not a power server. He's more of a placement forehand guy, doesn't have a huge forehand. But I think with on grass, you can kind of get away with placing a couple of those shots, you know, placing the serve, placing the forehand, using them as the setup, finishing at net, being dangerous on your backhand. I really like Mahatch's game on grass. I don't think, just a couple of shout outs before I move on. I don't think I've ever made a lucky loser a dark horse, but James Duckworth is someone whose grass court game I really like. He plays Demonor in the first round. Just think Demonor needs to be sharp for that one. Warning on that one. I think Demon needs to be sharp. And Dominic Stricker, not someone who I think is worthy of a dark horse, but I just want to mention, in theory, I love his game on grass. He just hasn't had the growth that I thought he'd have after the U.S. Open run last year. So I saw his name in the draw. I just wanted to mention that because, you know, theoretically, I'd love to make him a dark horse, but Stricker hasn't been able to build on what he did in New York last year at all. So dark horse, Tomas Mahatch. Upset alert is Karen Khachanov, who I don't think I've made upset alert very often, particularly at slams. In fact, he's just been extraordinarily consistent at majors, although I do think I may have made him upset alert at Roland Garros. Anyway, here's the deal with Khachanov on grass. He's just kind of lacking reps. He missed grass court season last year with injury. The year before, he was pretty average in the grass lead up, and then he wasn't allowed to play Wimbledon because he's Russian. And then the year before that, he made the quarterfinal at Wimbledon, but the year before that, there was no grass season. This year, he's 0-2 in the grass lead-in. So it's been kind of herky-jerky. There hasn't been a lot of, you know, consistent grass court play in Khachanov's career, if you look at the last 5 years, really. And in general, grass courts aside, it's been quite some time since I've felt like Khachanov has been at his best. He hasn't been horrendous, but he hasn't had a performance that has wowed me in a while. And if you look at kind of his results against top 20 players as of late, the stats also flesh that out. And he's got some interesting challenges in the draw. He's got Aslan Karatsev, who's, if he's going to win on any surface right now, it's going to be grass. He's got Chris Eubanks or Kontan Alis in the second round. Eubanks, his best surface is grass by far, and he's defending his Wimbledon quarterfinal points. Then you have Alis, who is basically the Hubert Hurkacz of the Challenger Tour. Third round opponent would be Holger Rune, so that wouldn't be an upset at that point, but I just don't see Khachanov making it through the first three rounds. Popcorn match. Fingers crossed that Andy Murray can go. It looks a little bit touch and go, but hopefully he can play Wimbledon because that would be awesome. He would play Tomas Mahatch. This is only the popcorn match for sentimental reasons, no other reason. But in all seriousness, this will be as emotional as anything. As the relationship between Wimbledon and Murray, the pressure that he shouldered, the drought that he was able to ultimately break in winning Wimbledon, monumental stuff. It will always define his career. I will always have unlimited respect for Andy Murray's ability to break through. And I don't think there has been more pressure on a tennis player ever than what Andy Murray had to deal with at Wimbledon. So I want to see him get his flowers, and hopefully we see that. Plus, doubles with Jamie Murray. Hopefully if we don't see the singles, we'll still see him play doubles with Jamie, which has somehow never happened yet. Ever. Somehow. Honorable mention here. FAA Kokkinakis. That should be a pretty good first round match. And then second round, we might see Djokovic against Jacob Fernley. Another British player who attended TCU a la Cam Nori. And he won Nottingham, the challenger, this year on the grass. He's only 22 years old. So there's some excitement around Jacob Fernley. I think Djokovic versus Fernley, that would also be a shout for popcorn match. With that, let's get to the quarterfinal prediction. And for Novak Djokovic's quarter, it is Djokovic defeats Alex Demonor. Now, let's start with the Demonor part because that is kind of the more complex part. Many will have Hubert Hurkacz coming out of that section. Demonor and Hurkacz haven't played since 2019. Despite what the power rankings were, where I had, I had Demon Orr in my number five spot, and I think I had Hurkacz, I think six. So despite having Demon Orr one spot higher in the power rankings, make no mistake, that is basically zero difference. And at the end of the day, in order for me to pick that, I went to the matchup. I went with Demon Orr because he has one of the lowest return ace rates on tour. He is sixth among top 50 players in that category, just behind Daniil Medvedev, which tells you that he is not an easy player to ace, not an easy player to get a lot of free points against. He is also fourth best among top 50 players against first serve. He is also a more resilient and more stable player in best of five compared to Hubert Hurkacz. I give him the edge mentally. That is why I like Demon to make the quarterfinal. I have him meeting Novak Djokovic, who has a nice draw, I'll tell you. Vit Kopriva, the qualifier, Czech Republic. Fernley, second round. Popperin, third round. Doesn't have a great game for grass. I know he's got a big serve, but he's a guy who likes to run around his backhand a ton and likes time on the ball, likes to play deep in the court. Now, Holger Rune, I want to talk about. It's a big X factor, right? Like, Rune, I feel like I've been saying this a ton over the course of Holger's career, but he is one of the most interesting players in the draw yet again. Because, first of all, he has a terrific draw. Soon Woo Kwon, first round. Paul Jubb, second round. Chris Eubanks, third round. That's at least what I have. His hyper-aggressive, swashbuckling, take the ball early, come forward, serve and volley, that play style that he has been implementing, the way he's been playing tennis, while I feel like it wasn't a great fit for clay court tennis, it is a good fit for grass court tennis. So maybe with the way Rune has been molding his game, the surface fit will actually be a little bit better for him. And that might work out against a Novak Djokovic. But I think Novak is just too refined, and he will take advantage of all of the decision-making errors and some of the unnecessary risk-taking that is a part of Holger Rune's game at the moment. And that's how I would see that matchup playing out. But I would really love to see Djokovic-Rune fourth round because I'm craving Rune against a fellow high-level player because I just want to see where he's at right now. I want to see a measuring stick match for Holger because I think he's in an interesting spot in his career at the moment. Novak at his best does just about everything better than Demon. Probably at 37 years old, coming off the meniscus surgery, he'll be a little bit slower around the court. But ultimately, I think the skill gap, the offensive clinicality will make up for that. And I have Djokovic over Demon Orr in that quarterfinal. And I think we can move on to the final weekend prediction. So I'll be revealing that in 3, 2, 1. Sinner over Alcaraz in 5. Djokovic over Zverev in 3. And in the final, Djokovic over Sinner in 5. Let me talk you through all these. All right, Sinner over Alcaraz. First of all, I kind of had to fight to find my true opinion on this match because some viewers have accused me lately of being a Sinner fanboy and an Alcaraz hater, which I've found quite comical because you can rewind to about, I don't know, like 1 year from today, particularly Roland Garros last year. Like if you read the comment section of when I picked Alcaraz to beat Djokovic and win Roland Garros last year. The narrative, and this was the narrative also for much of 2022, was that I'm an Alcaraz fanboy. So it's funny how it turns, and now I'm an Alcaraz hater. And of course, I do read these things. I don't love it. And there is almost something that I need to fight in me, especially after being wrong about picking against Alcaraz and going with Sinner at Roland Garros. You don't want to be wrong in the same direction again, right? You don't want that. But you got to just, again, I try to just brush that aside and think, what do I really think is going to happen here, right? I'm sick of being called, you know, an Alcaraz hater. It's ridiculous and stupid. But you got to throw that aside and think about, okay, what's my real opinion here? And to find that, well, first, I think what made me go the direction of Sinner at Roland Garros is mostly a health pick. It was mostly I was really concerned about Alcaraz's injury because it was a hitting arm injury. And that was the misfire there, right? I thought the injury was going to hamper him in a big way. Sinner's injury I was less concerned about, and I had my reasons for that. Come the semis, I need very convincing evidence to change my pick, right? I'm just going to go with what I picked before the tournament. If I have convincing evidence to change my pick, as I did with Alcaraz over Tsitsipas, and I changed my pick and I said, I don't think Tsitsipas is going to beat Alcaraz. I think Alcaraz is going to beat Tsitsipas before the quarterfinal. If I really think like, oh, I don't believe in my pick at all anymore, I change it. But if it's close, I just stick with my pick. So that's where I was at heading into that semifinal. But it's not really much deeper than that. And then you look at what happened. Well, Alcaraz wins in five. Did I see anything in that match that changed the way I look at the head-to-head? No, not really. Other than Alcaraz really dictating and overpowering at times with his baseline firepower, and particularly the way that forehand is able to produce easy offense. But this time, I would very much expect Sinner to move better, and I would very much expect Sinner to serve better. I would expect his serve to be a much, much larger factor if they played in the semifinal on grass. So those two things I think would be different. If you look at Yannick's losses this year as a whole, and you look at the conditions trends, Yannick's losses are in slow conditions. Exclusively this year. Indian Wells, Monte Carlo, Roland Garros. Yannick's losses are in slow conditions. If you look at since the US Open last year, the quicker conditions, the lower bouncing conditions, Sinner has been by and large dominant. Djokovic beat him in Turin, and that is really one of the only exceptions to the rule of Sinner being the best player in the world in faster, lower bouncing conditions. I think the forehand-to-forehand battle in Sinner-Alcaraz in particular is different on grass than it is on clay. I think it's much more even. Sinner hangs in there much better. And I also think, lastly, I think losing Roland Garros is in a lot of ways a tactical and mental advantage. I've said this many times about many other rivalries, but when it's really close between two players, really close, and this is, oftentimes the player coming off the loss has an edge because tactically they make more adjustments and mentally they have a bigger chip on their shoulder and less pressure. That's the logic. You can take the confidence route, but I don't think either player lacks confidence at all. I think both players take the court and they expect to win. They feel like they have the ability to win. So that's enough on Sinner Alcaraz. I rarely go in that kind of depth on a hypothetical final weekend prediction, but I felt the need to do it on Sinner over Alcaraz for whatever reason. I'll be a lot quicker from here on out. Djokovic over Zverev. First of all, I'm far more confident in Djokovic as a semifinalist than Zverev. That matters. That goes a long way. Tactically, I think Djokovic changes direction with his forehand down the line so much better than Zverev. I think that's a huge key on grass. Zverev would also need to hit spots on his serve to earn freebies. And Sasha doesn't always do that. Even when he's having a good serving day, he doesn't always do that. Djokovic over Zverev. Djokovic over Sinner. Again, the path factors in here. Djokovic has a better draw. He doesn't need to play Alcaraz to make the final. Novak has an easier path by and large. if this final were to happen, I would probably pick whoever is performing at a higher level. Because matchup-wise, tactically, I don't think there's much for either player to exploit. So it's really who's executing at a higher level. And I know I normally go with my pre-tournament predictions, but this is one that I could see changing my mind if Sinner is playing a higher level than Djokovic. If not, then no. But overall, I have Djokovic as my Wimbledon champion. I was leaning Novak, and the draw for me sealed it. Look, don't let one match erase what we know about Djokovic's grass acumen in recent history. Roland Garros told me his head is still in it. The fact that he's playing Wimbledon this year tells me his head is still in it. Physicality is not a concern to me on the grass. It was a big concern to me on the clay. It always is on the clay for this post-physical prime version of Novak. So this becomes about skill. Who is more clinical than Novak? Spot serving, deep returns, redirecting, absorbing pace, staying balanced on the grass when moving into corners. Even volleying, where over the years, Djokovic, when he's needed it, has put on these miraculous displays of great volleying performances. So I think skill to skill, Novak is still the king on grass. I think the fact that he's playing, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt health-wise. And with that said, I'm going to go with the guy who's been the best player at Wimbledon consistently in the last decade, even though it hasn't been all that great this season so far. I still feel like that can turn around. And Roland Garros was actually kind of a step in that direction for me. There is a reason why he's been in the final for each of the last five editions of Wimbledon. This surface helps him. And with the Roland Garros positive signs he showed, along with that factor, the grass factor, and the draw factor, I feel good about picking Novak Djokovic. Really excited for Wimbledon. If we got these matchups at the end, that would be terrific for tennis because certainly I was a little bit chalky here, and these are blockbusters. But looking forward to coverage. Hope you enjoyed this. Don't forget to subscribe, and I will see you next time.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.